Welcome to the Innate Vitality Code podcast, your source of science-backed information and inspiration on holistic healing, building resilience, trauma recovery, and self-love. I'm your host, Dr. Andrea Pennington. I'm an integrative physician, acupuncturist, and positive psychology neuroscience nerd. For over 20 years, I've been healing and teaching in my wellness practice, in the media, on stages, and around the world, as part of my soul's mission to end suffering and raise the consciousness on the planet. This podcast does not provide medical advice or psychotherapy. Consult your healthcare provider before implementing what you hear on this show. My name is Andrea Pennington. I'm an integrative physician, acupuncturist, best-selling author, and international speaker. My career in broadcast and digital media spans over 20 years. As past medical director for Discovery Health Channel, I've had multiple appearances on Oprah, Dr. Oz, and CNN, and my TED Talks have reached 2.5 million people. For the last several years, I've been helping other doctors, dentists, healers, and coaches from around the world to share their messages with global audiences through personal branding, publishing, online courses, and media training. And what makes this combination unique is that I am bringing my 20 years of expertise as a professional speaker and coaching other people on their TED-style talks. So I know what it takes to craft a keynote, a TED Talk, and even workshop presentations so that you communicate your message with confidence and clarity. Hello, hello, beautiful soul. Welcome to our next live masterclass. So happy to have you here. I am Dr. Andrea Pennington. I am your host for this live masterclass on positive childhood experiences and how they can counteract family dysfunction, toxic stress, and trauma. So this is a series of masterclasses that I'm hosting on live, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube. Type in the chat where you are watching from and if you have any questions. I did receive some emails and some text messages with questions, and I will cover them live today. If you don't know who I am, I'm Dr. Andrea Pennington. I am an integrative physician and trauma-trained recovery coach. I help people who are struggling with the adult effects of childhood trauma. That could be addiction, eating disorders, low self-worth, and a lack of self-love, or any host of physical or emotional conditions. So this is my service to the world. I am hosting these masterclasses because I realize that not everybody out there is a nerd like me. You probably haven't read all of these studies. And if you're a parent like me, I know that you want to do the best that you can for your child, and that is hard. So I want to help you with that. We all have the best of intentions, but sometimes we don't quite get it right, do we? All right, so great to see that I have Trevor in Vegas watching on YouTube. Hey, Callie, good to see you, my friend. on Facebook, and Kim and Ari in Syracuse, New York. Awesome. So far, we've got the U.S. repping it. I love it. I love to see it. And Fatima in Peru. Very good to see you all here. All right, so I'm going to get right into it. I don't want to waste any time so that I have plenty of time for your questions. So let us move on to our agenda today. So today, specifically, what we're talking about are positive childhood experiences. In today's masterclass, I'm going to review the original ACEs, that is the adverse childhood experiences, and the new categories that are considered adverse, the ACEs. I'm also going to recap some of the long-term effects of childhood adversity, or actually I think I will let the lovely Sandra D recap the long-term effects of childhood adversity. You'll see what I mean in a moment. We'll also review the social determinants of health. So we know that two children could grow up in very similar circumstances, but they may have different outcomes. Part of the reason why that is what we call social determinants of health. Hey, Macarena, good to have you here as well. And then I'm going to list for you these seven or more positive childhood experiences. So if you're a parent, if you're a teacher, a caregiver, an auntie, an uncle, a grandparent, you need to know about these because we can proactively help children avoid the long-term effects of trauma and toxic stress. I'm going to cover what you can do today, no matter what position you're in, for your children, for yourself or ourselves. I include myself in this because I'm a child of a dysfunctional family. I had many of the adverse health issues as a result, and I'm a parent. So all of this is super relevant to me. And even though this is probably the most controversial section of this training, I'm going to do it anyway. I'm also going to share what not to do. I actually took a vow when I stopped doing pediatric medicine to not give anyone parenting advice. But I'm going to break that vow today because there are very clear things that we can see from the research and from experience with people who've grown up in dysfunctional and toxic homes. There are very specific things not to do. And yes, Kali, if you would like to get the slides, I will email them to you. Did you get my email with the slides from our last class? Awesome. Hopefully, yes. Good to have you here, Karen Joy and Dr. Jill. Welcome. All right, so let's get right into it. In our first masterclass, we talked about these adverse childhood experiences. And just to summarize, we're looking at three categories of things that people experience before the age of 18. We're talking about abuse. That could be physical abuse, emotional abuse, or sexual abuse. We're also talking about neglect. That can be physical abandonment. It can just be emotional distancing. And we're also talking about household dysfunction. And that means if you had anyone in the home who was a drinker, who had a chronic illness, if there was divorce or separation or loss of a parent due to death, if a family member was in prison or in foster care, those are considered family dysfunction. All right, so what does that mean for us? Why do we care? Well, we care because in the original ACE study, they discovered that there were health conditions as adults that these people experienced. But then they also realized that there were new categories that needed to be added on. So if you've been to my website, Innate Vitality, you will have seen that there is a quiz to find out your ACE score. What isn't in that original quiz are these things. Discrimination. We now know that racism, gender-based violence, ableism, homophobia, transphobia, etc., those are considered adverse childhood experiences. If you've been bullied and teased and experienced that type of discrimination, you can add that to your ACE score, which means you're at increased risk for certain health and behavioral problems. Now, we're also looking at the environment. The social environmental pressures also are considered ACEs. So that's extreme poverty, being a family member of someone who survived a war, community violence, natural disasters, and I think we could include this pandemic as a natural disaster, and If you happen to be in a family where the parents, grandparents, great-grandparents survived genocide, slavery, or the Holocaust, if we see intergenerational oppression as in slavery, those are also considered adverse childhood experiences. So in our last class, we discussed all of the conditions that are linked with stress in childhood and these specific adverse childhood experiences. And so the reason why we encourage you to get your ACE score is because we know that if you have four or more ACEs, you're three times as likely to develop lung disease. You have an 11 times greater risk of being an IV drug user. There's more suicide. You're more likely to develop depression, liver disease, more likely to be sexually promiscuous. So again, you can visit innatevitality.com to take the original ACE quiz. We also know that greater than 67% of the population have at least one of these. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because a lot of us have normalized it and we just sweep it under the rug. And that's really what happened in my case. But we know that because childhood trauma and this toxic stress is linked to our mental and our physical health problems over the course of life, so not just childhood, but over the course of life. Because these toxic exposures impact brain development, cognitive development, learning, and social emotional development, also it affects our ability to form secure attachments to other people. It impacts our physical health. It's associated, as you can see at the top, with early death. And research shows that the kids that suffer the most and the long-lasting effects of trauma, they are the ones who experienced it early in life. They had trauma in multiple forms. It tends to be severe and pervasive, and it involves the ones who suffer the most were harmed by a parent or another primary caregiver. And that's when we often refer to all of those effects bundled together as complex trauma. So we know that childhood trauma is more likely to lead to PTSD. That's post-traumatic stress disorder. So childhood trauma leads to PTSD even more than what we as adults would experience. And so kind of under the umbrella of PTSD are things like anger, depression, aggression, anxiety, and dissociation. And children and young people who have PTSD may re-experience the traumatic event through, you know, intrusive memories, nightmares, flashbacks. They may avoid situations or people that remind them of the trauma. And you might think about this in yourself today. They also feel intense anxiety that tends to disrupt their everyday lives. And in addition, you may find that young people engage in aggressive, self-destructive, or reckless behavior. We know that kids will have trouble sleeping. They may remain in this state of hypervigilance, which is an exaggerated state of awareness, and they can be very reactive to their environments. So it's important to know that there's actually no typical reaction to trauma. The majority of children will show some sort of distress after a traumatic event, but most kids will return to their prior level of functioning. So what is going to influence whether a kid bounces back quickly or not? Well, that's the lesson of today's class. So if you are just tuning in, I am Dr. Andrea Pennington, hosting this live masterclass on positive childhood experiences. So generally, children's reactions to trauma will differ based on the type of trauma that they experience. It also depends on their individual, their family, their neighborhood characteristics, and their overall balance of these risk factors versus the protective factors, and of course their age and what stage of development that they were in. So if we're talking about young children, if they've experienced trauma, they may have, as I mentioned before, difficulty attaching to caregivers. They may be ambivalent, like they want them close, but then they push them away. They may experience excessive fear of strangers, separation anxiety, having trouble eating or sleeping. They might just be super fussy and unable to calm down. And you might even see that as a result of trauma, they show a regression. After reaching a certain developmental milestone, they might regress. When we get to school-age children who experience trauma, this is where you might see them acting out or being aggressive. On the flip side, they might become withdrawn. They might fixate on their own safety or the safety of others, kind of always, you know, being hypervigilant. They may even reenact the traumatic event through play. They might have frequent nightmares. They might exhibit difficulty concentrating in school. Now, when we get to the adolescent age, we find that they might be super anxious or depressed. That was me in high school. They might engage in risk-taking or self-destructive behaviors. So we see drug and alcohol misuse. Again, the sexual promiscuity, self-harm, illegal activity, dangerous driving. They might even feel an intense sense of guilt and anger and shame. And often they will adopt a negative view of people and society. So it's important to be aware of these various constellations. Of course, most of us are always thinking about suicidality because we know that children who experience these adverse childhood experiences, toxic stress or trauma, they have a high rate of suicidal ideation. And so that's what you could see in children and adolescents. Here are a list of the conditions that are linked in adulthood.
High levels of trauma, abuse, dysfunction, and discrimination lead to an increased risk of alcoholism and substance abuse, allergies, Alzheimer's, anorexia, anxiety, arthritis, asthma, autoimmune disease, acting out behaviors, binge eating, cancer, chronic fatigue syndrome, compulsive shopping, gambling, overeating, criminality, depression, diabetes, fibromyalgia, heart disease, high blood pressure, poor immune function, infertility, lung disease, liver disease, early mortality, osteoporosis, premature aging, relationship difficulty, smoking, sexual risk behavior, suicide, and violence.
Yeah, that is a long list. If you missed our first masterclass and you want to know why all those illnesses occur, I explained in depth what happens to the brain, the immune system, the cardiac system. So check that out on my website or on YouTube, LinkedIn, or Facebook. So again, when we start to ask the question, why is it that some people do better than others? So I hear that, Shaf, you adopted a negative view of people in society from childhood, and you experienced chronic fatigue from age 24. So it'll be interesting for you to see now where the balance was. Were there any of these positive things? So in public health terms, we refer to these social determinants of health. We covered this in the last class, so I'm not going to belabor it. But we're talking about safe housing. Sorry, guys, let me go back. There we go. Safe housing, safe neighborhoods. Did you experience racism or any discrimination? Was there community violence or gang violence? Did your community have opportunities to generate an income, get an education, or get a job? Maybe not for you, but for your parents. That is one of the social determinants of health. Access to healthy food, physical activities. Was the air and water clean or not? And did you or the people around you have language and literacy skills? Those impact it a lot. And so today's class is all about these positive childhood experiences. And there's a list of seven that we typically think through. And I'm going to get even more specific on what we can do today for the kids in our lives, the children in our lives, and what we can do for ourselves if we didn't have positive parenting and positive experiences. All right, so one, did you have the ability to talk to your family about your feelings? That would be a positive experience that could counteract. Did you feel that your family would stand by you during difficult times? This is particularly important for kids today who may have been teased or bullied, or maybe their sexual orientation or gender preference is causing them concern. They need to know that their family would stand by them. Did you enjoy participating in community traditions? So if you have children, you need to think about this connection to something greater than just the family. That could be a positive childhood experience. Did you or do your children feel a sense of belonging in high school? This is a big, big, important time of brain growth and psychological development. And this is a time when kids need to feel that they belong. Unfortunately, sometimes kids pick the wrong groups to belong to, but we'll get into that later. A positive childhood experience is feeling supported by friends. Having at least two non-parent adults who took a genuine interest in you. So this could be a family member, but it could be a coach, a mentor, a member at church or one of your youth groups. And number seven is feeling safe. Did you feel safe and protected by an adult in your home? These are critical, critical positive childhood experiences. Now, the National Child Traumatic Stress Network, that is a mouthful. The National Child Traumatic Stress Network says there's other things for us to think of. So beyond the support of family and friends and people at school and members of the community, we also find that children who have a sense of high self-esteem and a positive sense of self-worth, they can tolerate the childhood trauma with less of the adult problems. A feeling of self-efficacy, having goals or dreams for the future, or spiritual and cultural beliefs that give a child a greater meaning or a sense of their life. If a child has a talent or a skill, it could be excelling in school or a sport or playing an instrument. And do your kids have the coping skills that would allow them to apply these coping skills in a variety of situations? So when we think about all of these things, resilience to childhood trauma largely depends on the supports to a child and his or her family. So these are the things that we're thinking about. There are some reasons to have hope. I mentioned this in our last class. H-O-P-E is healthy outcomes from positive experiences. In the last several years, there have been a lot of great studies that say, yes, we must identify these adverse childhood experiences. We must intervene, create safety nets, but at the same time, we need to encourage the positive outcomes that can come from positive experiences. And so the three keys here are to focus on safety, nurturing, and compassionate caregiving. And I'll lead you to some resources if you'd like to investigate these things a little bit more. One of them is positiveexperience.org. You'll find that there are a number of nonprofit organizations, particularly in America, that are really focused on therapeutic modalities and training interventions in the school and in the community to really support families in bringing forth these positive experiences. So the number one thing for us to think of as we adults is we want to prioritize close, nurturing, responsive, compassionate caregiving. So I shared in our last class why it is not a good idea to let a baby cry it out. I know, maybe your parents or your grandparents or your great-granny said, don't pick up the baby, you're going to spoil the child, or you just got to let them cry it out, you need that sleep training. That is actually incorrect. For a tiny baby who is developing the neural networks that are tied to self-regulation, self-control, and self-soothing, they have to learn it from a responsive caregiver, which means if the baby cries, you pick them up. So if we look at hunter-gatherer tribes, you know, researchers have seen that out in the wild, people didn't put the baby in the crib or leave them somewhere. Babies were strapped on. They were always with the family or extended family. And babies who cried were tended to, not shamed or belittled, or told to suck it up, or told that boys don't cry. And if you look at hunter-gatherer tribes and indigenous people, they don't smack their children. They do not punish them harshly. They might give you a swat if you were going towards an anthill or about to drop down a cliff. So we can take some lessons from them. Close, nurturing, responsive, compassionate caregiving is what we need. Your presence is just as important as action. This was a lesson I had to learn as a young mom, a single mom. I felt like I always needed to be doing something with the kid, like, you know, entertain her, take her to the park, take her here, take her there. And what I discovered in doing this research is that no, more than action, our kids just want us present. Sometimes we think we need to buy them presents, and only to find that they end up playing with the boxes and the wrapping, and it's like, wait, I just spent. So your presence is just as important as what you do, and safety is the priority. What we need to prioritize is making sure that our kids feel safe to come and talk to us no matter what. And of course, that takes training for us as well. So I would invite you to explore attachment parenting, which is the notion that we can be there for our children when they're forming these attachment bonds. Right as a baby is born, they tend to orient with their eyes and their ears, tuning into your voice, to your scent, and to your eyes or your face. And that's what we want to do. We want to be nurturing, responsive, compassionate. Have I said that enough yet? Are you getting it? the tip? We also need to focus on being consistent. I made the mistake of trying to do everything. I wanted to be everything that my mother and father were not. I was trying to be the opposite. I was trying to be fully present, and I went too far and got to the point of near exhaustion. What you want to do is be present and consistent so that they know that if they cry, their needs will be met, not sometimes, but regularly. Now, if it's an occasional time when you're in the shower and the baby cries, or you know, you're upstairs and you didn't get there right away, that's not going to be a long-term detriment to them, but it's about that consistency. And again, for us, if you will investigate attachment parenting, it's all about creating this sense of safety and connection. The other most important thing you can do as an adult or as a parent is to heal your own attachment wound. So in those very first years of our life, we're creating our whole model for attachment. It's a framework that our psyche picks up based on how we were parented. And if your parent left you to cry in the crib for hours and hours, if you had a parent who was emotionally absent or who got sick and was hospitalized and away from home, you may have experienced a wounding that led your attachment system to maybe be either very distant or dismissive, avoidant, or you might be super clingy. You can actually heal those attachment wounds as an adult, and we can talk a little bit about what that means. All right, so what is it that we can do today? I'm going to talk through some of the strategies that will work, and then I'm going to open up for questions. All right, so it's no surprise that I'm going to say create positive connections. What I mean by that is for you, first and foremost. You need a support group. As a single mom, it was the hardest thing ever to safely raise my daughter, especially when I moved to France, because I don't have a family support network here. So you've got to proactively find a support group. Now, if you happen to be someone who grew up with these adverse childhood experiences or trauma, you might consider one of the 12-step fellowships. If it's affected you to the point where you have a lack of self-love, then the adult children of alcoholics and dysfunctional families is a 12-step fellowship that might be of interest. If you find that you're a codependent, always looking for validation from other people, you know, that sort of thing, then CODA, or you know, the Codependency Anonymous might be for you. You can also, of course, reach out to friends. I mean, it's a catch-22. We feel sort of ashamed as parents if we have to admit that we're stressed or hating parenting or thinking dark thoughts. And if you can't reach out to a friend, then definitely a therapist or a trauma-trained or a trauma-informed healer. It is so important for us to, I'm going to get into why trauma-informed care is so important, but it's critical that we connect with people who get it, because as a physician, I've said this before, but as a physician, you'd be surprised at how many people came to me saying that their family told them, oh, it's all in your head. Or what? You're still living in the past? Why can't you get over it? You need trauma-informed care. And yes, Dr. Jill, absolutely. IFS, internal family systems, is very, very helpful for doing the inner child work, which we're going to talk about in a moment. And thank you, Shah. Yes, I offer a monthly support group as well, totally for free. It's the Real Self-Love group, so we'll talk about that. And you can join me for free every month and get some support to create positive connections. Now, for children, it's important that for our young people, we try to create connections for them with trusted adults. It could be a coach, it could be a family friend, godparent, or therapists. You know, certainly, therapists are a godsend when it comes to children, and definitely when it gets to the teenage years. Am I right? But I would just highly recommend that you don't shy away from that, because some people think, oh no, if my kid's in therapy, it's going to follow them for the rest of their lives in a negative sense. I can promise you that it can follow them for the rest of their lives in a positive sense. That could be the positive childhood experience that counteracts the drama and trauma. There's another great website. It's based in Florida in the United States, but they have so many resources online. If you happen to be struggling or you're a teacher or a caregiver and you want some resources, visit the centerforchildcounseling.org. There's a treasure trove of info there. The other thing that I highly recommend that everyone learn is nonviolent communication. This is a type of communication style developed by Marshall Rosenberg, and it's so impactful. It was for me because I happened to grow up with a very harsh, critical parent and my dad. My mother was on the other side. She said, children are to be seen, not heard. And so the only way that we could really interact in the household was often through erupting, and it was very violent communication. So learning nonviolent communication allows you to get in touch with your feelings and to be responsible for what you say and your reactions and to deliver what you say in a compassionate way. So I would definitely recommend that you get the training. So you can read a book, you can watch videos online, you can work with a NVC therapist or trainer to learn, and then you can model it with your children until it becomes a way of life for you. NVC practice can also help you create safety and trust that will end up opening the mind and the heart of your young person. Now, one of my friends and authors in the book, Time to Rise, or two of them, plus me, three of us in the book, Time to Rise, all experienced something. Let me know if any of you have ever experienced this. Your kid does something. Maybe they knock something over. Or in the case of Time to Rise, beautiful soul White Fire said, the cat knocked over a pint of milk and it spilled on the table. And when she looked at the cat, that was one thing. She looked at the kids, and on their face was a look of fear and horror, because they knew that usually she would erupt. Anybody else like that? I've had it too. We can learn to practice NVC so that we are not erupting and reacting. In my case, if I got angry or triggered, I was acting and sounding like my parents, because that's all the way I learned communication. And maybe it's the same for you. And so it may sound weird that you have to go learn how to speak to your children, but I promise you it will open up their hearts and minds so that they don't have to be afraid to come to you when they do screw up or when they need help. All right. So what else can you do today? My friend, heal your trauma and relearn self-regulation. The majority of the people that I work with today in the Real Self-Love movement find that they are triggered by the events that they see in the home or in the world, and they have to learn how to regulate themselves. So in our last class, we talked about how we learn how to soothe and regulate ourselves based on what happened with our parents. But if our parents were absent or inconsistent or neglectful or even abusive, then we may not know how to regulate our emotions, how to calm down. We may stay triggered if we experienced developmental trauma. Our brain and our nervous system is on hyperdrive. And so mindfulness training is one of the ways that you can start to do this work of regaining control and self-regulation. Meditation as well. Now I recognize I have been doing trauma recovery work for over 20 years as a doc. And one of the things that people said when we first sat them down to do mindfulness and meditation was they were flooded with memories, flashbacks, emotions that were just overpowering. So if that's the case, I have a little resilience recovery bundle that's coming up in about a week that will guide you through getting in touch with emotions in a safe space. I mean, already, if you visit AndreaPennington.com, you'll find on my resilience resources something called the attunement meditation. It's a 5-step mindfulness meditation process that I developed for my patients who had chronic stress, anger issues, addiction. And in that recovery model in my wellness center, we found that leading people through these 5 steps at their own pace could help them regulate the nervous system, get more in touch with their feelings so that they could not act them out or act them in, but deal with them in healthy ways. Play is something that many of us didn't get in our childhood, and it's actually helpful for us as adults today. So I would encourage you to incorporate play into your day so that you can kind of get out of this sense of being performance-oriented. Now, self-care is a very broad and general term, but we're going to talk about healing the inner child in a minute, but this idea of caring for yourself before you care for your children, it's amazing how many people resist that. They really feel like, no, I have to do everything for my kids first, and then they get depleted, and then they erupt in anger or frustration, and that's not good for the kids either. So prioritizing self-care with adequate nutrition, hydration, sleep, movement, quiet time, not being on social media or the computer or streaming, but just being alone with yourself, journaling, talking to a friend, and so on. So prioritizing sleep, and also in my case of treating trauma for all these years, body-oriented therapies. Somatic experiencing is, you know, something created by Dr. Peter Levine, something that we used in my wellness center all these years ago, and it was incredible to see how these therapists could skillfully get a person back into their body and regulate the nervous system while processing some of the trauma of their past. So I highly recommend that, particularly because we know that trauma is stored in the body, in our tissues, in our brain, even in our DNA. So yoga, particularly if you find a trauma-informed or trauma-trained yoga therapist or center, dance could be incredibly helpful. And I know me and my friend Jill have been doing that, playing music, you know, dancing around. It helps to get you in touch with your body and your feelings and regulate it. I also practice Qigong, and I find it incredibly helpful. You could also go to someone who practices Qigong or acupuncture to help you get into balance with your nervous system. So what else can you do today? Reparent yourself. I don't know how many of you out there have heard of this term, reparenting. Does that seem strange to you? The idea that you could be a parent to yourself? Well, the idea is that you can give yourself what you needed back then so that you resolve the neglect, abandonment, abuse, and the trauma of the past. Whatever you experienced in the past probably impacted your developmental stage. So there's these Ericksonian developmental stages. I'm thinking I might actually do a whole training, probably in the real self-love movement. One of our master classes will be about how do you complete a life stage according to the Ericksonian model. You know, we know that babies from birth to age 3 go through a particular set of developmental milestones. And then when you're in your preschool years and in, you know, primary school and middle school and adolescence, each of these stages, there are particular milestones that we would typically go through and achieve. But if you didn't get healthy parenting or you were living with continual stress and drama and trauma, you may have been stunted in one of those stages and not progressed. And so with reparenting, you can actually resolve the trauma and move forward and complete those life stages. So Reparenting really involves connecting with your inner child or children. There are multiple versions of you. Some of them are locked in time. It could be the happy inner child. They're not all negative. But your inner child, your inner teenager, an inner rebel, they're, you know, they go on and on and on. And it's important to become your own loving inner parent. Like, what did you need back then that you didn't get? Was it that someone would listen to you? Did you need someone to believe that what was happening to you was true and that it was harmful? Did you just need to be seen and accepted for who you were without being shamed for your behavior? Did you need to be loved unconditionally? Well, you can start to give that to yourself. That is part of what reparenting looks like, and redirecting the inner critic. I've shared before that I had like 13 Supreme Court justices in my head. I had all of these negative voices in my head judging me on my appearance and my behavior and always telling me that I wasn't enough. And we have to redirect that inner critic. Part of the reparenting process could involve what I use is the guided meditation, journaling, and using IFS or internal family systems to reconnect with the inner child, even connecting with the inner critic or whatever other parts of you have evolved to help you survive your childhood. Like, I had a perfectionist part. I also had a part that would just get so overwhelmed, she would shut everything down. But by learning how to redirect and heal them, it's allowed me to stand on the stages today sharing this message with the world. And practicing self-care is part of how you reparent yourself. If you didn't get what you needed in terms of your food, your attention, your temperature control, it may sound simple, but yes, giving yourself the time to enjoy a bubble bath or a hot shower without rushing to take care of everyone else, that could be part of your reparenting. And Sandra asks, what about the stuff we eat and drink? You've recently found a link between your food choices and feelings of anxiety. Yes, well, thank you for the question, Sandra D. And thank you for the voiceovers for my list of health conditions. So Sandra, yes, there is a link, particularly if you experienced early childhood developmental trauma, toxic stress, a critical, harsh parent, if you grew up in a family with drugs and alcohol, any of those. What we know is living with that toxic stress impacts the HPA axis, that's our hypothalamus, pituitary, and adrenals. You know it as the stress response system. And why is that important? Well, when our adrenals are pumping out adrenaline and cortisol, and the brain does too, it's got its own store of cortisol and norepinephrine, which is the brain's version of adrenaline. What we see in the short term, you'll have a rise in energy, like sugar, so that you could fight that bear or run from that, you know, predator. And that's a good thing. We have a feedback loop that would go to tell the brain and the adrenals, okay, danger's done, you can calm back down. So it's okay to have a short spike of these stress hormones. But if you lived with prolonged stress, if you lived with toxic environments, and you were perpetually afraid, then your nervous system may have stayed in this hypervigilant mode. And again, if it was very early in your life that you experienced any of those things, then you may not have even developed very well circuits, these circuits that help you calm down, meaning you get stressed and then it takes forever to like calm down. And so why is that important? Well, we know that children who experienced long-term stress and drama and trauma end up having a low cortisol. And they end up having a hyper-reactive response. It's called the glucocorticoid response, where if you're under stress, because they don't have that little mechanism to that feedback mechanism to turn it off, the brain will create this craving for either the fatty stuff or the sugary stuff. And so, yes, you will feel anxious, and some people will feel they need to go and snack or binge to get that brain response to calm down. So that's why we have to do this reparenting. We're literally creating new neural pathways of calm and quiet and safety, and not reactivating those pathways that were created in childhood. And the good news is you can recover. And I'm so glad to hear that you have, Shaf. You have recovered from adrenal fatigue. If you experienced something early in life, including the chronic fatigue, and then had a stressful job in your 40s, well, we know that your nervous system was primed to have stress and stress-related illness. So I'm very glad to know that you've recovered from that, Shaf. Good to know. You will also want to prioritize sleep. So as parents, usually parents want their kids to sleep. It's like, don't you make a noise, the baby's sleeping. I want you to do the same for yourself. Like, prioritize getting a good 7 to 9 hours of sleep at night. If you're not getting good sleep, you should talk to your doctor. You may need to reach out to someone like Dr. Jill Stocker, who helped me enormously. For example, we know that as we age, our hormones change. So if you're not getting good sleep, either because the kids are there or because your hormones are changing, you need to do it. By getting 7 to 9 hours of sleep, you are helping your own brain not be hyperreactive. So that means shutting off screens after dinner, having dinner at least 2 hours or more before you go to bed so that you're not processing a big heavy meal, turning off screens within an hour of going to bed. That includes phones, that includes computers, that includes the television, so that your brain can start to calm down. Yes, you could also dim the lights. Don't use any overhead lights after about 8 p.m. so that you can bring your brain into its own diurnal rhythm. You know, we all are on this sort of circadian rhythm, and we want to keep that good old pineal gland entrained with the light-dark cycle, all right? Play is on here again. I've definitely been really enjoying my various support groups and how we prioritize play. And we all talk about the ways that we find joy in reparenting and giving our inner child what they needed most. And for me, it's a lot of dancing and creativity and music, music, music. All right, so I said that this was going to be a little controversial. Here it is. What not to do. If you have questions, you can start typing them in the chat. Get yourself ready, because after this, we're opening up for questions. All right, so here is Andrea Pennington's suggestion on what not to do. No punishment, rejection, or suppression. If your child has been, quote unquote, acting out, it is, and you know that they have experienced either abuse, neglect, some sort of maltreatment or loss, divorce, separation, death of a family member. If they are reacting, we call it acting out, which has such a bad rap, but if your child is reacting to trauma and drama, they should not be punished for that. Because they don't necessarily have the verbal capacity to explain what they're going through, unless you model that for them. So that could look like, wow, hey, I can see that you're like really getting amped up there, buddy. I get it. It seems like you're pretty angry right now. Do you want to tell me about it? And they might kick and scream. And granted, of course, I'm not inviting you to let your children have tantrums, you know, all over the place, but to literally engage with them non-judgmentally, eye contact, as best you can with a compassionate, open facial expression to let them process out their emotion. Yes, get them to a safe place. They may need to kick and scream and express. And you, if you can be there without suppressing them or judging them, they will learn how to be tolerant of those emotions and express them and calm down. I know that this is controversial, but there you have it. Children are usually not doing things out of a desire to be defiant. They are doing it, if they are at a language, if they have language, they might be doing it to get a response from you because you've been unresponsive in the past, or someone in their environment has been unresponsive in the past. So there, when we say that, like, you know, kids have this oppositional and defiant disorder, it's not even a real thing. It's not a disorder. It's a symptom. It's a symptom of toxicity in the home or in the school or somewhere in the environment, and they don't have a better way of expressing it. All right. Controversy, don't you love it? Practice presence and tolerance. And I emphasize the word practice. I was not good at this. I used to be a perfectionist, type A, aggressive person. And I would flip a switch and I would be so angry and so quick to snap. I happen to have a daughter who's very sensitive and taught me from her birth that I had to regulate my own emotions or it would create a storm within her. I had to learn to practice patience and tolerance. If you want some help with that, my 21-day compassion meditation series is great. It's totally free. Sign up. You get each day, you get another meditation to listen to. And just in 8 to 10 minutes a day, you can start to develop more tolerance and compassion. It is a practice. And try to practice that with your kids as best you can. None of us are perfect, and we don't even need to strive for perfection. Notice in this entire masterclass, I haven't said perfect positive childhood experiences. I will direct you to the good work of Winnicott, who talked about good enough parenting. We just need to be good enough. So practice nonviolent communication. And as best as you can, do not suppress your child's self-expression. They need to learn how to express it. Granted, it's not going to always look pretty, but over time, they will become more refined as these higher brain centers come online. Remember, this prefrontal cortex, which is involved in executive decisions and decision-making and self-regulation and control, it doesn't fully develop until we're in our 20s. So as a child, they're not going to have that. They've got to practice it and learn it from you and get mirrored by you. Please do not tell your kids to suck it up or soldier on. That's why we have this burnout culture today. People who think, oh, I'm so resilient. Look at all this stuff I've just soldiered on through. No. Ending up with burnout means you've been strong too long. And crying, from the standpoint of a pediatrician, crying is a sign of health. It's a sign of life. And it should not be shamed. From the day you were born, your cry meant that you were alive and meant that you could call out and get your needs met. So please don't teach your children that they shouldn't cry. And don't punish them with your withdrawal or abandonment. You know, I remember hearing parents saying, look, if you don't come over here, I'm leaving. I'm going to leave this house. Like, what does that tell this child? It tells them, I've got to behave a certain way in order to keep my parents' presence and love. Do not punish them or threaten them with withdrawing or abandoning them. Now, for those of you who, like me, you need to go to the bathroom for an extra 20 minutes to cry it out or do some tapping, do some breathing, some meditating. We're not talking about that. That's not the type of abandonment we're talking about. I'm talking about threatening to leave the house or to leave the planet. And please do not make your love conditional. Your love should not be based on grades, school performance, looks, whether they're as nice as their brother or not. No, no, and no. Okay, we're getting close to top of the hour. Let me get off my soapbox. I suggest that if any of this applies to you, meaning you experienced some of these adverse childhood experiences or trauma, or if your children are in that environment now, we focus on holistic healing. And holistic healing is really based on the work of, well, there's a countless number of researchers. You don't care. Bottom line is there are four key elements. And these four keys are the four R's. If you are looking for a therapist or you're looking for people to take care of your child, the first R is to realize that there is a widespread nature of childhood trauma. It's everywhere. And you have to understand, or your caregivers need to understand and realize how it impacts a child's emotional, social, behavioral, cognitive, brain development, physical development, as well as their mental health. In addition, we adults have got to be aware. We need to realize the influence of trauma on family members. you know, whether you are a first responder, a service provider, other people are going to pick up on that secondary stress. So it's important to know. The second R is recognize. You need to recognize the symptoms of trauma. And that can include the symptoms of post-traumatic stress. Of course, these vary by gender, by age, the type of trauma, and the setting. But you definitely want to recognize that these acting out, as I've called it, these challenging behaviors, they're normal. That's what happens when we are threatened, when our life is threatened, when our attachment to our caregivers is threatened. And so these behaviors, if you can recognize them as normal, self-protective, adaptive reactions to highly stressful situations, rather than viewing them as a child intentionally misbehaving, that recognition is going to help you get to the root of what they mean. So once we understand that, and even for yourself as an adult, I understand that my perfectionism and my people-pleasing was a reactive response to growing up in a dysfunctional home. I also know that this tendency to get overwhelmed and then to go into hiding and just under be in the world was also a trauma reaction. So we know that also children might become hypervigilant. So recognizing that that may be because of what they experienced in the past. You know, always checking. Want to make sure you're okay and they're okay. And, you know, the other thing to recognize is that sometimes the symptom of dissociation, if you find a kid is kind of spaced out, daydreaming, that is a learned response. And that is what helps children avoid feeling. It helps them avoid thinking about that traumatic experience. So trauma-informed care really means that we recognize how this trauma influences a child's engagement in activities and interactions with peers and adults, and even whether they're going to be responsive to rules and guidelines in the world. All right, so the third R is respond. You want to respond by making necessary adjustments in our own language and behavior. We want to help create the environment and other things that support the child's recovery and resilience to trauma. And then the fourth R is to resist re-traumatization. And that means we have to proactively shape a child's environment to avoid the triggers. It could be sight, sound, smells, objects, people that remind them of the original trauma, and protect them from further trauma. Okay? So, I know this is a lot. Thank you, Jill. Happy to know that this is ringing true. And yes, we've got to get rid of the hush-hush side of things. We've got to break the silence, as I shared in our last class. All right, so there are some helpful resources for you. I shared this before. I don't see any questions in the chat. Let me know if you have questions. But helpful resources. The book, Holistic Healing, Life After Trauma, The Top 10 Traits of Highly Resilient People, and my most recent book, The Real Self-Love Handbook, also on audiobook. These are great resources for learning emotional management and self-awareness. You'll also read in these books the stories of other people who have overcome traumatic pasts, adverse childhood experiences, and have gone on to thrive. And yes, using the four R's for your inner child. That is awesome. You know what? You get applause. Excellent work, Kali. So in our next masterclass, it is the top tips to build resilience. If you missed the first masterclass, it's available as a replay on my websites and YouTube, LinkedIn, and Facebook. Our next masterclass is on Thursday of next week, and that is the top traits of resilience from my book, The Top 10 Traits of Highly Resilient People. I will teach you how to build resilience. And then in a couple weeks' time, you can take my new resilience quiz to find out which of the 10 traits you need to build up. Now, in addition, we will do a masterclass on June 3rd about holistic healing, where I can go even more in depth on the various types of modalities that can help you heal if you are an adult who has chronic illness or emotional challenges as a result of growing up with trauma. And Shaf and Kali and some of you, Sandra, you've been at the live monthly coaching that is part of the Real Self-Love movement. This is my gift to the world. It is free. We meet every month, sometimes twice a month, where I lead a teaching about all of we've been talking about, self-love and how the false self is created and how to reparent. And then I lead a healing guided meditation. So you can find the links to that on my website. There's also a life writing course. This course includes the life writing from my book, The Real Self-Love Handbook, and guided meditations to help you identify the faulty thinking, where you got programmed from the past, so that when you identify the limiting beliefs that you've taken on, you can start to reprogram your mind and rewrite your narrative and become the hero of your life. So has this been helpful for you? I hope so. I hope that this has been a useful class for you. I want to remind you that you can visit innatevitality.com to find out your ACE score, the Adverse Childhood Experience score. And as I said, tune in 2 weeks and you will be able to take our resilience quiz and get some support there. Thank you so much for being with me on this journey. I really appreciate you sharing this video with other people or parents or adults who have lived with adverse childhood experiences. We can stop this cycle of trauma and the intergenerational trauma. And I'm so grateful to do my little part in all of this. So thank you for being here. Good to have you here, Kaya. Thank you for the thumbs up, Trevor and Cecilia. I so appreciate you. Glad that you were able to tune in. And the suggestions for supporting teenagers, I will message you about that, Shireen. You can rewind back. I shared positiveparenting.org is a great resource for people who are currently living with the toxicity. All right? Well, it has been so wonderful to have you all here. I am going to my next class. So if you have other questions, you can always reply to the email that you got when you signed up for this masterclass. And if you didn't sign up for the replay or you want the slides or more resources, check the link in the description. And that way you can get the slides and ask me questions for our next class. All right? Until we meet again, my friends, please know this. You are a gift to this world. So share your presence with passion. Much love.
To the Innate Vitality Code podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend, rate the podcast, and subscribe. This helps me with getting my message out to a wider audience. For show notes and other episodes, visit innatevitality.com/podcast. That's vitality.com/podcast. You can also sign up for my free masterclass series. Each month, I take a deep dive into the topics of holistic healing, resilience, trauma recovery, and self-love. Just visit innatevitality.com.